Attention everyone, this is an emergency broadcast. The loud frequency coming from your radio is not a mistake. Do not turn off your radio, but instead turn up your radio as loud as it can go. Do this so we can broadcast this frequency as loud as possible.
And welcome everybody to another episode of Game Stuff. I'm your gamer gal Kalai, and with me today is Roberto.
I did not hit her. I did not. How you doing, guys?
Little Tommy Wiseau over here.
Mm-hmm. Do you understand life?
I don't.
Mm-hmm. I'm also joined by Matt. What's up, Matt?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
For those of you that are new to our podcast, we are a conversational podcast about video games. But before we get into this week's topic of the show, which we're going to get into streaming services, let's get some housekeeping out of the way. If you like us, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Google Play. It does help get our show out in front of more people. You can follow us on Twitter at GameStuffCast. We have a Facebook group. You can just search the Game Stuff Podcast and ask for an invite. We'll invite you in. We also have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/provengamer. Now, before we get into the topic of the week provided by Matt, let's start with Roberto. What have you been playing?
Oh, I got some new games that came out today, so I can talk about them. So, all right. So, the first game is a game that has a lot of very good golden arcade game history. It was one of the most notorious video games of its time back in the 80s, and comes from legendary developer LlamaSoft. This is called Tempest 4000.
Oh man, I actually used to, that was like my first, Tempest was my first arcade love.
Yeah, that like, I remember playing, like, I think in, like, a Sears or something with the Sega Genesis around, because, like, I think that was when it was on the 3DO, and I thought this was, there was this cool tube game, and it's like, you're like a little, like, yellow spider, and yeah. What you do is, you know, you shoot the other little spiders crawling up, and it's actually really, really cool. So, the game actually has a very strong history. It was basically the that generation's crisis. It would melt arcade cabinets. It was the first true three-dimensional tube shooter. So a lot of dimensions and three-dimensional depth originated from this game. The guy, LlamaSoft, is bonkers with what he's able to do, but he's made a lot of crazy, very good games. And back in 2012 or 14, he made TXK for the PlayStation Vita, which was a game I played all the time back when I was in college. Yep. So now Tempest 4000's here. It's Tempest. It's beautiful. It's 60 frames per second. It's very lightning fast. It's great for everybody. It's great for, you know, for people who like arcade games. It's great for people who want to get, like, you know, get a little dose of the past. It's really fun stuff. So that's one game. The next game I can talk about too now is actually a game that Matt, I believe, has mentioned on the in the chat, and that is 20XX.
Oh man, so it's so good.
Yeah. So 20XX is basically the Mighty Number 9 that we deserved but never got, because it was Mighty. That was not Mighty Number 2. So, as in, and yes, that was a bathroom joke. So anyway, so
he said it was a strong poop.
Yeah, Mighty Number 1 too. Publicly funded strong poop. So anyway, yeah, quite a kickstart. But in any case, so 20XX is basically a very much inspired Mega Man platformer action roguelike. You start at the beginning. You have to kill these robot bosses. There's not too much context to the story. It seems to be very like slapstick humor, a little laid back, but it's a lot of fun. The biggest thing is the gameplay, and it's very strong. It's tough. You are going to die a lot, but every time you play, you get a little bit stronger and a little bit better with what you're able to do. Mega Man is... well, not Mega Man. It's very much Mega Man's inspired. And with the music, the gameplay, the shooting, like, you can also choose different shots, different abilities. You could actually steal your boss's power, like Mega Man, and you could actually steal, like, multiple. So you could have
three at a time, I think. Well, you can have a bunch, but you can have three equipped at a time.
Right. So then, and then use them at your will. So
yeah, it's really cool. So this is actually, I'll get it out of the way here, is like, this is actually one of my what I'm playing this week too. Like, I've not been able to stop myself from playing this so much, because it's like, I love roguelike games, and Mega Man is probably like my quintessential platformer from back in the day. And so, like, slapping those two things together and getting it so right, even if I'm not like super fan of the art, but the mechanics are so on point that it's, I can't stop playing it. It's so freaking good.
Yeah. It's also on the PS, it just launched on PS4. It does feature online matchroom making, so I was able to play with a guy, and we kicked some ass, so that was really cool. And, yeah, definitely highly recommend it, guys. This was a PAX Rising highlight. I highly encourage you guys to support the developer on this endeavor. The next one is Project Nimbus Code Mirai.
I remember you... I think you mentioned that in the chat at some point.
Oh, yeah, so basically, it's basically a Gundam Wing... anime-inspired action game with that, but its own unique thing. Basically, it's World War III happens, everybody drop nukes, so everybody builds cities in the sky, just like that one 1990s dance song, you know, the why do we build castles in the sky? So yeah, literally in this game, everyone build castles in the sky. Now we blow each other up with missiles. And mechs.
So, that's pretty dope.
Yeah, a lot of fun. The music's engaging, and the atmosphere's good. And two more. One is actually the second to last one is actually a game that was made by the Burnout developers. They founded their own studio in the UK called Three Fields Entertainment, and the game is called Danger Zone 2.
What is that?
Oh, okay, cool. So Danger Zone 2, it's basically the Burnout Crash Mode. As you know, EA had the Burnout move games. Crash Mode was one of the biggest thing it ever had. You know what? It was great. You could just simulate car crashes, cause lots and lots and lots of destruction.
Yeah, it's actually my favorite part of those games for a really long time.
Yes. So then Danger Zone 2 is basically a one big game that's just Crash Mode. So you can just boost through cars, blow up things, destroy things in trucks and high-powered sports vehicles and stuff. The first Danger Zone came out last year, and it was a lot of fun. You know, short. There's no narrative or story, and there's not a whole lot of missions. But, you know, good for what I was able to do. And then, they also made a Dangerous Golf, a game called Dangerous Golf, which was the same thing with
it's
the
really,
golf.
It's really hard. Kali's cat is on her lap, and she has a pretty great mustache right now. The tail is just all up in her face. I'm sorry, Roberto.
No, it's okay. Kitties are very welcome on this podcast. So
yeah, that was hard. It was hard to keep a straight face there. Kali had a giant bushy mustache.
Yeah, the butt was in her face. So
yep.
But in any case. And then finally, one last game for the Switch was for the Nintendo Switch was actually a game that was on the PS4 and then also mobile. The game is called Galaxy.
I didn't check it out, the free version, because I wasn't sure if it's like the full fledged version that we had on PS4. I've been meaning to download it on my Switch.
I can say safely right now that while it does have like the typical tropes of like, you know, a free-to-play game, like, you could do this, and you could do this, and you have to upgrade this, and you have to wait for the upgrades for that. I haven't seen any solid push for a microtransaction.
That's good.
So, and it's very much the familiar Galaxy on the PS4. The only thing is that ATAC, he steps out of the void, finally, and is rescued. The whole point is that you have to go through, like, 20 different sectors, each with several missions, to get to Earth and defeat the Empire. But your transformation core has been wiped, has been like damaged, so you can't
mech it up.
Right, you can choose to be a mech or a ship before each mission, but you can't just transform like mid-mission like you could on the PS4 version.
Yeah, man, so I really wanted to love like the original version of that game, but it was so fucking hard.
Yeah, yeah, that the Galaxy was notorious. I mean, they eventually patched it in to have checkpoints.
Yeah, but... and I just remember it. So like it came out, and I loved like the physics based motion, like how inertia based it kind of all was.
Right, and, especially when you toss things with your grappling hook.
Yeah, and then just like it just kicked my ass so hard that I never picked it back up. I think I got like I would get in a run and I would get like 3 sectors in or something like that, and then I would just die every
sector
time.
4 would just kick your ass. Yeah,
yeah,
and because it also entices you to get all that gold and all that for the upgrades and the repairs and all that stuff, but then it's like you do that, you run the risk of running into an enemy and just getting your ass kicked. And
yeah.
I can't begin to tell you how rage quitting that was. So then they added checkpoints and it made it better, but there was always like, you can play on expert mode because it's just the true experience. I'm like, no.
I don't want that. I don't want that.
Yeah. So in any case, all right, so let's move on to Matt. So what have you been playing this week, bud?
Well, so like I was saying, 20XX has been in like heavy, heavy, heavy rotation for me right now. I'm a huge Mega Man fan, so I can't put that down. Against my own better judgment, for some reason, I decided to pick up Octopath Traveler. And despite me not particularly liking JRPGs, I am actually having a really, 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 really good time with it. I only have, like... I've only played maybe, like... 3 or 4 hours total of it, and I'm through two people's intros because you can kind of do that, but man, it's really fun. The combat is set up in a very interesting way where like enemies have weaknesses and you can break their shield, and it's kind of puzzly in a weird way, like not like a normal strategic JRPG. Like there's a different depth to the strategy, and it's a really good time. Really, that's about it. I've been playing that, and 20XX has taken over my whole life. I love that game, and I just don't want to stop playing it. Kalai has unsheathed her head.
Yeah. Yeah, one note about the Octopath Traveler. I'd have to... it's been reported that Square Enix is totally... Like the dark side of the force, Square Enix is totally underestimated how popular it is right now. Right now, if you order a physical copy on Amazon, you're looking at a 2-month waiting list.
My wife went to the mall, like, I think it was, like, Sunday, and went into the GameStop, and it was the last, she got the last copy that they had for me. It was crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. What have you been playing, though, Kalai? So that's literally it. Also, Keep the Baby Alive still. I'm going to play that forever for the next 18 years.
Well, I've been really into Dragon Quest VIII.
Thanks, Veronica. I started that, and
I've been having a lot of fun with that game. I mean, I've never played a Dragon Quest game before, so for it to like to experience it for the first time is really amazing. And I like the fact that it's not random enemies, like you can see the enemies and avoid them, because a lot of times I have problems with the JRPGs where I like, oh, I walk 2 steps and oh, I'm in a battle.
Random encounters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, so that I've been having a lot of fun with. I also got to play Quest for Dungeons, which is a roguelike. I got it for 3 years. Yes,
yeah. So that game I think works better as a portable game than a console game, because I do have it on PS4. But it's a nice little laid back, you know, traditional turn based game. Very old fashioned. Kind of reminds me of like an old game on the PC, like early PC.
Yeah, it's a very traditional roguelike.
Yeah, so it's a very neat title. As a matter of fact, I'm pulling it up right now, and yeah, it's from Upfall Studios. So, really, really nice game.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I couldn't stop playing it, and then I told my husband that he should try to play it. I handed him my 3DS, and lo and behold, I didn't get it back for 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I went to bed at 10:30 because I was exhausted on Saturday. And he was up in bed playing. When I woke up, I was like, so, did you finally die? He goes, oh, I beat the game. It's like, oh, okay.
Damn,
that's cool.
If you like that, there's this game that came out a couple years ago that is very much in the vein of traditional rogue that got really popular kind of in the Twitch indie community, called Sword of the Stars of the Pit. and it's pretty fun. It's a very similar, but in a sci-fi universe, but very traditional style rogue. So if you like Quest for Dungeons, you might want to check that
Sword
out.
Sword in the Star, the Pit, like
Sword of the Sword, Stars.
Sword of the Stars.
Colon.
The Pit.
Yeah.
So like, shouldn't it be like Sword of the Caves? Like,
yeah,
you
I don't
go
know,
from
man.
Stars to the Pit, like.
Apparently, Sword of the Stars is like this. It's like a. It's a franchise,
yeah.
Unbeknownst to myself, and this. This was like its roguelike iteration. I think it's like actually a board game or something.
I see.
It's fun though. Pretty fun game.
Well, the title sounds pretty cool. Like there was a game I played called Mutant Assault, and it was like, oh, this is a kind of a gnarly sounding game, and it wound up being a really good game. Super Mutant Alien Assault. I think that's what it's called. Yeah. Yep. So, okay, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I also got to play some Nine Parchments this weekend.
I saw.
There you go.
With four people.
Yeah, we had four people, and it was our couch co-op. All four people were at my house.
Shut the fuck up.
Me and my husband, my roommate. And thank you, Veronica. She came over, and we totally played like half the day. I have to say, she totally saves our ass. When the three of us play, me, my husband, and my roommate, we're just like, okay, we died. Let's try again. Okay, I'm going to go this way. You're going to go this way. She comes in. She's like, okay, now I'm going to heal. Do not die on me. Okay, we need to do this, this, and this. And
she's like the field commander.
She is the field commander. And we were like, we got a rating better than worst. We were getting like, why? Why? Because they rate how your teamwork is.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of fun doing that. And then today I got really lucky from the Indie Gamer chick and picked up another game on the Indie Gamer party that she's having right now for her birthday. Happy birthday to her. And it is called Esper. It's actually the Esper Collection.
That was the VR game you were talking about, right?
It was the VR game I was talking about. So I got both 1 and 2, and I got to start playing 1 today. If you have VR and you like Portal, you need to play this game. Oh my god. So, the concept of the game is that you have telekinetic powers, and you're in a facility that they're testing you, where everybody has to be tested. And apparently in the second version of the game, you actually go out and you stop them or you fight them. I'm not quite 100% sure because I haven't gotten to that part, I'm only on the first part. Well, they test you by giving you puzzles. So the first puzzle they do is they hand you a Rubik's Cube and they say that you should be able to solve it with your mind within 21 moves. And I'm like, oh shit, I can't solve a Rubik's Cube. And so now you're like trying to pick it up and I'm picking it up. And they're like, wait, if you have telekinetic powers, you're supposed to be really smart. Oh god, they're not smart. All right, we want you to take the Rubik's Cube and put it in the box. We'll make it easier for you. So, like, the humor is really good, just like Portal. And I only got to play an hour and a half of it, but I wanted to mention it because, again, it was just so funny and such a blast.
Someday, I swear to God, I'm going to buy a VR setup at some point in my life. Because that sounds great.
I should probably talk to my contact, Jack, about Esper, because it's from CodeSync, and CodeSync helped develop Shu, and also Augmented Empire, and also something hockey, 90 hockey something. I forgot what it was called. So yeah, Shu
Pocky Hockey.
No, oh my god, it was. We played it at PAX East. Something pucky puck hockey something.
Duck what? Puck. No duck game. Puck yeah, 99. Oh Cluster puck.
Pluck that something 99. The 99.
Cluster puck 99.
Cluster puck 99. That was it. That's a good one. Wait,
we got there. We got from pocket hockey to cluster puck.
Yeah, Kalai has walked away in some kind of laughter.
she can't handle the ridiculousness.
Yeah.
No, the cat was ready to leave the room. So, audience, I'm really sorry. You probably heard my kitten in the background. I got this kitten about 6 months ago, and she became very attached to me to the point that if I'm in a room and the door is shut, she will meow outside the door until I let her in, including every morning I have to let her into the bathroom when I'm taking a shower because she gets very upset. She has to protect me. So she just wanted to leave the room, so I'm like, okay, go. I'm safe, you can go. Anyways, the only other game I've been playing is Bravely Default 2nd. I beat the pastry guy. Apparently you make pastries. I was like, I'm not even... I don't get the point of that job.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit like a Saturday Morning RPG, which is another great game for the Switch, the Vita, the PS4.
Have you played that game?
Yeah, yes. There's actually, I mean, this is not terribly a spoiler, because there's just so many good secrets in that game. It's a game inspired by Saturday morning cartoons, and therefore the 80s. There's actually a hidden boss that I found inside of a military base, a mountain, and it mentions how the computer is trying to play games for nuclear battle, nuclear conflict. So, it was, the game played me a joke. So,
yep.
It was, I forgot what the name of the game was called. I think it was called The Big Mac or something. But, and then it, I'll mention the references to what it's referencing later. So then I attacked it, and I gave like all my good attacks and nothing happened. And it attacked me and it hurt me. And then I said, wait a second. This game is nodding to one of the coolest 80s films ever with Matthew Broderick.
Mm-hmm.
War Games.
Yep.
The only winning move is... Not to play. So when I stopped playing, it started suffering damage. And I just sat there for a good minute while this thing's bar decreases. I'm like, okay, this is funny. This totally played me. And there's also so many other jokes to, like, Transformers.
Did you platinum that game?
Not yet. I have to. I need to go through it again on Vita and like, because it,
oh,
it encourages
I'm
you.
Sorry. I did. So.
Oh, okay. So you knew exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
The gauntlet. Has been thrown.
Yeah. Well, I'm playing way more games than both of you guys combined, so there's that.
Also, that's also true.
Yeah, like, yes. I'll brag and say that I just got Mother Gunship, the key for that, and I'm going to put my impressions for that next week. And then I got another game from China called Gene Rain. And it's cyborgs and stuff. And it looks cool.
I got this. There's this game I've had to play a few times this week called The Baby Shit in the Car Seat. And,
oh, that sounds awful.
It's not great.
Oh my god.
Like
anywhere but the car seat. Let's just keep this moving.
By the way, Rugrats is coming back.
I saw that.
Gotta bring that up. Yeah. So, I mean, remember Rugrats had some video games, so it's still relevant.
Rugrats sucked. Now, can I continue with this beautiful transition I was about to do? Thank you to Matt. Yeah. So, piggybacking off last week's discussion about Google possibly entering the console race and developing its own streaming service, we're going to talk about all the other gaming services out there, both active and failed. So, let's start with the failed ones first. I'm just going to give some examples of failed services. OnLive and Gaikai, which are both purchased by Sony, and I suspect that they became the backbone of which is the PlayStation now.
Yeah, I think that is partially true. I don't know that... It's weird, because I read up on... I think it was Gaikai specifically, was like pretty well-liked by the community that surrounded it. And so when Sony bought Gaikai, they got... Everybody got really excited because they thought streaming... Like, very good streaming was coming to the PS4, and it just never manifested itself in that way.
We also have Gamefly, which apparently is currently active. That's an active, right? It's not doing very much, but it's still...
Right.
Yeah, for $9.90 a month.
Yeah.
Wow! Today. For $9.99 a month, you can have streaming video games. And then we have the NVIDIA GeForce Now, which is a $7.99 month subscription.
I think the GeForce Now is in beta when I looked. But I'm not I don't think it's like a fully set up service yet. I think it's in beta right now, and that it's $7.99 to start, and I don't know where they're going to go with it yet.
Okay, so why do you think these services failed?
I mean, I think there's several reasons. I think the biggest reason is, we kind of talked about this a little bit last week with the Google stuff, is that the ISPs in America and like the infrastructure we have set up here don't handle the bandwidth well enough, or don't allow us enough bandwidth to stream games at a rate which is fast enough for us to play them and feel like we're not streaming them, right? Which is a huge problem. Like, I don't want input lag because my input is being sent to the cloud and coming back. And I think that OnLive specifically was so ahead of the curve, like, as far as an idea for streaming games, that they just, it was too early and people weren't going to adopt it. It, like, wasn't, there was no confidence in that brand. Because nobody knew who they were or what they were. So I think they just kind of shot themselves in the foot out of the gate.
What do you think, Roberto?
I think it's safe to say that, like, Gamefly is is something that came a little too little too late with its services, because nobody really knew where we were headed in regards to a physical versus digital iteration of gaming. Back when, in 2008, when PS3 and 360 and the Wii were going head-to-head, the concept of having an entirely digital gaming library didn't seem that realistic. I mean, maybe realistic for smaller games, like, you know, like Bionic Commando Rearmed and, you know, other, and Journey and Flower, like smaller but really good games. But the concept then of having entire full-fledged video games digitally was unexpected, and then it turned out people really liked this, the convenience and the fact that you don't need to worry about a case and the fact that you have your whole collection there. So that's where, you know, I think PlayStation Now and some of these other digital services came in. But for the physical ones like Gamefly, people just, like, you know, it's always at that extra responsibility of having a physical copy.
Gamefly isn't physical.
It's not physical anymore?
It is, but Gamefly has a streaming service now.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that. So I imagine then that they're probably going to axe off the physical stuff eventually to save money. But I think now it's just, there's just so much choice. I mean, personally, me, I don't really use like a subscription platform for digital titles. But I imagine that for those that really need it, It's good that it's there. I'd have to say, though, going off of what Matt said, you need to have a really good bandwidth structure and a very good connection with being able to establish those kinds of connections in gaming and things like that. So, like today, for example, metaphorically, on a smaller scale, I was at the gym and there was Wi-Fi, and it's Planet Fitness Wi-Fi. It's like nothing. It's not the greatest. You can probably stream some music there. But that's it. But here's the problem. The bandwidth of that sucked. I couldn't even get like a song out. Like, I listen to Japanese K-pop or synthwave, like Carpenter Brut, or even video game soundtracks, like the soundtrack to Fury, while I'm working out, because it's, you know, you get lost in it and you feel really cool. And it wouldn't even stream any of that. That's how crappy the Wi-Fi is. I was in the specific mood for Attack on Titan, the TV show, which has an amazing soundtrack. I try to install the Spotify app, and where it would have taken maybe 5 seconds here in my home, it took maybe 10 to 15 minutes at Planet Fitness. So,
yeah,
it just,
I mean, the other problem with like a public Wi-Fi too, though, is like you're sharing the bandwidth of so many other people that it's
right. So
I think that's definitely not a good test case for any of that stuff.
So then who's to say, like, so then in regards to the streaming services and things like that, then who's to say that, you know, the Wi-Fi would just be specific to you? You may have to share that, you know?
Right.
So it is kind of an interesting perspective to observe.
My thought is that there's so many out there. So
that too.
You have so many services, and each one is offering their own selection of games. So how do you pick?
Right.
You're better off just buying the game you want.
Well, I feel like right now there's like a, I don't know, there's such a low push for this kind of stuff that, and it's I would assume it's inexpensive to try to launch something like this, that a lot of people are trying to do it, because I do truly think that once we get the required bandwidth speeds on a consumer level, that this idea of games as a service is the next leap we make. So, like Roberto kind of mentioned, like, this past generation, like the 360 and PS3 generation, we kind of started to do it, but this past generation now is where I think people really embrace digital gaming over physical games. And I think the next leap that we're going to make is going to be to streaming once our bandwidth can necessitate it.
All right, so let's go to the active services that are currently out there. I'm just going to go over them really quickly, and then we'll have a discussion.
So these are like a list of the bigger streaming services that a lot of people use.
Yes. So we have the PlayStation Now. It is 1 month is $19.99, 3 months is $29.99, and 12 months is $100. Gives you over 650 PS4, PS3, and PS2 games. 120 of those are your exclusives. It does include things like The Last of Us and Killzone. And it's available on PC and PlayStation. Then you have the Xbox Game Pass. It's $9.99 a month. It has over 100 games. You can play anywhere, which includes your PC and your... it includes the Play Anywhere titles, which allow you to play either on your PC or your Xbox. They do have games from the Microsoft Studio being dropped day one, and other games such as Vermintide 2 being dropped day one on the Game Pass. And it does give you discounts if you decide to purchase the game.
Now, that's huge, I think.
The discounts?
Yeah, I think that's such a good idea.
No, we'll talk about that.
Yep, go ahead.
And then we have EA Access, which is exclusively for your Xbox. It's $4.99 for a month, $29.99 a year. It's over 50 EA games that you can play. And it's 10% off EA digital purchases on Xbox One. And this year at E3, which we kind of talked about before, EA Origins was announced. Before I go into that, EA Origins is EA Access, but for PC.
Right. They had to rebrand it because EA Access is exclusive to Xbox.
Okay. I actually didn't know that. Thank you. Then at E3, they announced EA Origin Premier, which gives you over 100 PC games. It's $14.99 a month, $9.99 for a year, but allows you 5 days before the game is released to start playing the game.
Wow, that's nice.
That is. I think if you look at Xbox's model, I think that's the best one by far. I just feel like they're doing something right. Whereas like PlayStation, I think it's just too damn expensive for what they're giving you. You know what I mean?
Not to mention, not only is it expensive, but some of those games don't actually have trophies.
Right. Yeah.
Which a lot of people like, the trophies. EA Origins, I put it in here. I don't know how relevant it is because, again, it's pretty much EA games.
Right.
And I don't know if I would spend $100 a year for an EA game.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it's going to come down to is somebody out there, like, Gamefly is a pretty good example, right? I mean, maybe EA won't ever give up rights to stream their games, or maybe you'll see more studios kind of come up with their own streaming services. But I think keeping it cheap, and then I think when somebody finally figures out the way to do this correctly, and we get all these licensed games from different studios on one streaming service, is going to be the ideal. Instead of paying, like, $5 for EA Access, and then $10 for Xbox Game Pass, and $12 for PlayStation, and all this stuff. Maybe there'll be one central service or system.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Roberto?
I have to agree that PlayStation Network's PlayStation Now services, it's way too much money for what's there, and I think that if the prices were lower, it'd probably be a little bit more effective, because there's plenty of digital games I want to play on the PS4.
Sure.
And even just that are out there. I mean, in some games, you have to really dig deep to find even. Like, there was a sci-fi game called Echo that was apparently really good on Steam, and I bought the game and I want to check that out. But, most of the time you won't have that opportunity without that stream service, or even just to kind of dip into something that you don't know if you're going to like or not, you know? I think it's just, it's too expensive. And then the EA Origin service, I guess, is okay. It's just, it depends on what you're looking for. Once again, EA's,
I think it's so limited.
Right. That's the thing. Cause they have like free games on the Origin service, but like sometimes they're games that everybody probably already has, or you can get for real cheap, like out there. Like they have Dead Space 2 and 3, and you can probably get that game for 15, 20 bucks, you know, complete, somewhere. As a matter of fact, if you were really lucky, you could probably get the Dead Space 2 Limited Edition, which comes with the Wii exclusive game, Dead Space Extraction. So you get two games for one. So, yeah, but in any case, I think EA doesn't have the portfolio right now to, I think, justify the cost. When you think about games that are not sports, you have Mirror's Edge, and you have Star Wars Battlefront and Mass Effect Andromeda. And that's right. It. You know, you don't have, like, there was one of those videos on Facebook that flashed back to Jungle Strike, which was a game that EA made. And I was like, this is when EA had a hell of a portfolio of games. You had the Need for Speed. Oh, that's the other one. Need for Speed. You had Soviet Strike. You had Future Cop LAPD. They helped publish the video game Reboot. Like, back in the 90s and the 2000s, they were just generating all sorts of stuff. One game in particular I remember today was a game called Freedom Fighters, which was for the PS2 and Xbox back in 2002, and was a game where you are locked in an urban battleground in New York City against the Soviets. It's basically Red Dawn, but in New York City. The music scares the shit out of you. It's just so good. And I'm like, this is when EA had a diversified portfolio. And now it's just, their portfolio is just so damn limited that I don't really think that the pricing is worth it. I mean, if you're a sports fan, then all the power to you, but
right,
if you're not, then forget it. And then, like, we mentioned Xbox Gold, right?
Xbox Game Pass.
So far that's been kicking some butt. Like, I hear about games that are free, like Splinter Cell Conviction and backwards compatibility, and I'm like, they're, you know, despite the fact that Microsoft's been really blundering a lot lately with its first party exclusives, and it's kind of like where it finds itself now. That's been one of their saving graces.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that they've kind of nailed this. So, like, I think they had a couple of missteps at the beginning of this generation, but I think they're going to start to be known for the Games Pass. And I think they've already, with just the pricing and the availability of games, outshone Sony. I think you have Games Pass, don't you, Kalai?
I do actually. I was about to talk about that. I have Game Pass, and the nice part being at $9.99 a month, you can ask friends and family who don't know what to get you a $20 Xbox Gold money, and blah, blah, you've got two months of over 100 games provided for you from a great gift. And that's what I did. And I was very, very surprised at some of the games that were showing up on there. And in fact, Vermintide 2 is dropping this month for consoles. It's already out on PC, but it's actually dropping this month for consoles, and it's going to be a day one game for Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
Which I like. That's the kind of stuff that we need with a streaming service. What, you know?
When I have a question. So when you play a game on your Game Pass, right, do you actually physically download the game onto your Xbox, or are you streaming it from the cloud?
No, I actually physically download it, so I actually get to...
I guess physically is a weird word to use in that sense.
Yeah. But yeah, I actually download it, and I can download it to my Xbox or sometimes to my PC, because some games...
Are play anywhere. Right. Yeah, I think that's the... So the saving grace of their service is the fact that it doesn't require you to use cloud computing to game in any sense. It's a cloud service, or it's a streaming service rather, that gives you access to download these games, and you keep them on your system until the sub runs out, and then you just can't open them anymore, I assume. Like, you won't be able to use them.
If they decide to pull the game, then yes, you can no longer play it.
Right. But so if your sub expires and you have Vermintide 2 on your system, what happens?
Then I wouldn't be able to play it.
Right.
Okay. I'm sure it verifies somehow.
Yeah, I think there's probably a DRM or something there that verifies that you have Games Pass in that game. But I really do think that they're the ones that are kind of leading the charge on this, funny enough, where at the beginning of this generation they had kind of fallen behind in hardware and exclusives and stuff. I think if they can get themselves some really great exclusives and launch it on this service, and this be their flagship service, I think they're really going to start to take off.
Oh, yeah, the new Horizon Forza is going to be day one for Xbox. I like that series. I like playing them. I like playing them with my friends. So I pay $60 for this game, and then sometimes I'll play it for a little while, and then I'll stop, and I won't be into it as much as my other friends are because I'm not into driving games. So for $60, that's 6 months, that's almost 6 months of Game Pass on my Xbox, and right. now I've got the game to play. I really wanted to try Sea of Thieves, but I didn't want to buy Sea of Thieves because I wasn't sure I was going to like it.
Right.
It was day one Xbox Pass. 10 minutes later, I was like, I don't like this game. I'm glad I didn't buy it.
Right.
So, and a lot of their exclusives are up there, like ReCore is up there, which I have to finish.
Oh, Kalai's going to fall asleep, guys.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
An interesting question is, I wonder how... So, clearly, like, the studios have to license their product somehow to Xbox to stream over the service. And so I wonder how they divvy up money. So, like, oh, your game got X amount of downloads this month. So, here's your royalty check for us having your game. I wonder how that works.
That's a good question. I have no idea.
Yeah. I think that's another interesting avenue for this whole entire discussion, like Netflix and stuff. Like, I have no idea how they divvy up revenue for those shows or anything like that, with like a monthly service, because the only insight I have into a streaming service paying artists is like Spotify or something, and I know that music artists tend to hate that kind of shit, but it's the only way to get their music out there. But they hate it because they only get like cents or fractions of cents for each play or whatever. They really don't make much money, so I wonder how that works.
Do you have any more thoughts, Roberto?
It's interesting to see where we're at right now with streaming services and where they'll take off. And then, of course, as we move on to the next generation of systems, we also have to factor in what Nintendo will offer whatever they offer when their services eventually goes live. They're supposed to be offering free downloads of their retro games with online components. So what's to say right now that maybe they might be thinking about a similar Game Pass system?
Right.
So it's a very ambitious time that we live in. So it'll be unique to see how things transpire.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Matt went into our Facebook group and said, streaming is big in the movies and TV world, but is yet to truly penetrate into gaming. Have any of you tried any game streaming services? What are your thoughts on the future of gaming culture embraces this tech? Leo writes, I think one of the more interesting plays, which isn't quite your typical streaming per se, is the graphics cards on demand service like GeForce Now. With GPUs returning to almost normal prices for now, I'm not sure there's going to be a huge market for it, but it's definitely an interesting concept. Troy says, latency and ping isn't a concern for streaming movie shows and music. It would be a serious concern for most of the most popular genres today. The time it takes to send the game image to your device, you have to make an input command, that command to reach the server, and the result of the command to show back up on your device would be too great for anything short of turn-based games, especially if there is a competitive aspect to the game. Not to mention the extreme variance in internet quality and speed and other issues, like potential data caps. You know how annoying it is when your HD show or movie gets all pixelated when the bandwidth drops? Imagine that happening for your badass new 4K game. And holy crap, with 4K, games needs a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah, it's true. We went on to talk about, like, just a little bit of discussion, but... he reminded me of Sega Channel, which was something that I actually had. Like, my parents got it for me. And it's funny that, like, now we can't deal with streaming services, but I shit you not, Sega Channel worked like I had the goddamn game in my Sega at the time in, like, 1995. Like, it fucking worked so good. And I remember the day that my parents got the letter or something from Sega telling them that they were canceling Sega Channel. Like, Sega Channel was going to be discontinued. And I remember them coming to me and telling me and me crying my eyes out because I just had this giant library of games all the time. And I was going back to, like, my physical stuff. And I was like, God damn it! Why? Like, no, don't do this to me. And it's funny that back then they could do it so well and now we're having trouble with it. And Sega Channel was dope, so suck it, Nintendo. But not really. I love you, Nintendo.
Matt says, I remember when OnLive came to service and everyone was stoked. Then we saw how bad the latency affected its service level. Then Sony brought it up and used the tech to make PS Now. Pricing is also a huge thing. People will say, and I agree, the PS Now fees are silly for what they offer.
Totally.
I don't think the future is the actual streaming of games, like Netflix does for movies, but in services like Xbox, Game Pass, or EA Vault. Unfortunately, that's one more step away from the consumer owning their games.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a scary thing that we didn't really talk about, I guess. So we're already kind of moving towards, like, more and more people are buying digital games, and your ownership rights over a digital product sometimes can be up in the air, like if they shut the service down or something like that. We kind of saw that with the PT demo, right? They put that up and then they took it away and, like, literally you just can't get it anymore. So this would even be, like he's saying, like a step in further in that direction where you don't own anything. You own the service and you kind of get the service that they give you. So that's a really interesting point, actually, that I didn't even think of.
Right.
Yeah, that is a good point. That's, go on, Roberto.
Yeah, like something that I remember was that I bought from Konami, there was a game called Rush and Attack, and they actually did a remake of that. I remember playing it for a time, and then it was okay. It wasn't the best game out there, but it was all right. And suddenly I wanted to play that game again, and I looked like, you know, I tried my damnedest to look for it, and it was delisted. Like, that's the thing, that's the biggest danger about digital games right now. It's like, when those licenses expire, there's nothing you can do.
There were some games on the Xbox 360 arcade that happened to, I remember too, a while ago. I don't remember what games they were, but I remember that happening.
One of the most infamous ones was Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
That might be the one.
Right, so I still have that on my PS3, and I'm never deleting it, because...
Because you'll never be able to get it back.
Once that's gone, it's gone. It's not coming back.
Right. It was a great beat-em-up, too.
It's like... Game. So, like, yeah, if you have a subscription and you need to start, you know, you need to save some money or you're just not finding any kind of use for it, then it's like you're never going to access those games again. Like, that's right now, I'm a PlayStation Plus subscriber. There might come a day where PlayStation Plus gets, you know, deactivated or maybe I move on or something. I don't know. Right. And all those nice free games that I have will no longer be in use. So, like, that's always, I think, the concern that we have to take into consideration. Right. This is why, like, physical copies have now been on the rise.
Yeah, and I think it's also why physical won't ever actually die.
Right, because once it's more than just the fact that it's yours. It's that it's yours, and you can play it whenever you want, even if the services go down. There's going to come a point where the PS3 services go down.
Yep.
You know, they get sunsetted. You may not be able to play Warhawk. You may not be able to play a lot of the online games. But you'll still be able to play exclusive PlayStation 2 games like Killzone. Like, Killzone's a perfect example. The multiplayer for that has been officially sunsetted. Right. But it's still a great game to play single player.
Right.
So
yeah, and I think that that's going to be the tough transition that I don't know we'll ever fully make.
Right. So I think there will always be some physical something, whether it's like a little, whether it's a disc, or maybe the Nintendo Switch, you know, the cartridges are our future.
Yeah,
yeah, so, yeah, those are some interesting questions to continue asking as we move on, and especially for limited run games, because as you know, the PlayStation Vita's physical carts have been sunsetted, and the last physical games for the Vita in the United States will be in this area, will be probably arriving around March, and then, you know, that's when I think we'll really start to see the scope of where physical games lie with handheld games, the next system, things of that sort.
Yeah.
All right, that brings us to the end of our show. But we do have some sponsors. We are sponsored by Amazon. If you do like our show, just go to provengamer.com, click on the Amazon link, and do your shopping like normal. It does help out the site. We are also sponsored by Humble Bundle. We chose the Extra Life charity. If you follow the link in our show notes, it will take you to the Humble Bundle store. You can do your shopping like normal. You can get cheap PC games, and it does help out Extra Life. So, where can they get in touch with you, Roberto?
ProvenGamer.com. Also, I can be found on Twitter at Jehuty88. That's Jehuty88. That's a reference to Zone of the Enders, the second runner. Also, I can be found on Instagram, MajorSloth1988. Can be found on Facebook. I can also be found on Snapchat, MajorSloth1988. My PlayStation Network ID is VectorMan88. I can also be found on StackUp.org, military video game charity, on their website. It is a 501c non-for-profit military gaming charity that sends video games to the troops. I'm an active writer there and a participant there, so you might see me quite a bit. Also, I am also a writer for But Why Though PC, which is a podcast that explores pop culture and why it's relevant. That's about it. So I will see you hopefully on PlayStation Network. I definitely want to find people for 20XX and some other stuff, so feel free to find me.
What about you, Matt?
On all socials, I'm Missed Enough, MISTAHNUFF, and you can find me under that name on both Steam and PS4 as well. And then every once in a while, maybe I might be writing some reviews for upcoming things on Proven Gamer, specifically Chasm, which is finally fucking releasing, and I might do an overview of the No Man's Sky update that comes out at the end of the week, so we'll see.
Cool. You could find me on Steam at Kalai21, that's K-A-L-A-I, the number 21. You can find me on the Xbox at Miley21, that's M-A-I-L-E-21. You can find me on the PlayStation at Miley1978. Please add me as a friend, especially if you're playing the Trials Fusion game, so that way we can talk about more leaderboards.
So that I can wreck all your scores.
Yes. Which I think some of your scores have been wrecked by Jim.
Yeah, I think Jim is actually better at like the easier tracks than I am by a lot. I just can't seem to catch him sometimes.
Yeah, I can't catch him either. Don't feel bad. Right. That's why I stopped playing. It's like, why did I stop playing this on the Xbox? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, right. Okay.
You can also find me on Twitter at Kalai21. And you can find me, I run the Game Stuff Twittercast, which I'm not that great at, so sorry. But hey, you can follow us there. If you like our show, we have other shows. We have The Trophy Horse, which is our PlayStation podcast. We have the Nintendo Dual Screens, which is our Nintendo podcast. And they're killing it, so check them out. We would like to thank some people that have helped us with this show. We'd like to thank Isaac Sego. He did the logo. You can check out his website. That's isaacsego.carbonmade.com. And the band we use is Take Away the Ugly. We put a link to them in our show notes along with Isaac Sego's website. So go ahead and take a look at that. Check out their artwork. Check out their music. We really appreciate it. And you can find the band on Bandcamp. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of Game Stuff.
See you guys.
Eat your stuffs. Have a good week. See you next week, and may the force be with you.